Welcome to Audio Essentials Lecture 5. This is our final lecture for this particular module. We have one more study group, but this is the final lecture for the Essentials module. So, with that being said, we have one more study group after this on Thursday. Both this lecture and this study group will cover interfaces, but from a different point of view. So Thursday's study group is going to cover interfaces and mixers from more of a hardware perspective. So some of you may not care as much, but I still very much think that all of you should at least listen to the study group if you can't attend, in case you think you might need one in the future or feel like you want to get one eventually. You'll learn all about interfaces and mixers. This particular lecture, though, is coming at interfaces and how we interface with audio and work with audio from more of a computer perspective. And we're going to call this Windows Audio Subsystems. This is important because Windows has different subsystems that it has either used in the past or still does use, depending on what sound card you're using. Before I get into that, though, did anybody have any questions about anything from last week? Feel free to say any discoveries or start some dialogue or some discussion. We can definitely answer some questions for a bit if people have them.
Christian.
Yes, it's not a question, but in the chat window I will paste a link. It's a website called eHome Recording Studio, and on this website there is a complete guide how to make a home recording studio, and there is a vast majority of information regarding microphones, especially about the best condenser, the best dynamic microphones. There is a list of the best low price condensers, dynamics, and this website is simply, I think, fits to this course, and if I can, I will paste the link.
That sounds like a goldmine of information. What might be better is for you to email it to audioio@ciscovision.org, because that's basically what we would do. And people can look at that for their assignment now, and we will post it to the wiki in due course, because chat's pretty easy to lose. People can close the chat window and forget to copy stuff out because they're taking notes on other stuff. I would send that to the Audio Essentials list, and then everybody can benefit from it in a form that they won't easily lose, and we can put that up on the wiki in due course.
Okay, I will post it after this class.
Regarding that link, I actually have seen that as well. That was one of the places I first started doing my research for stuff. So that's a really good place to start and look at stuff. So good job, Christian.
Randy.
Yeah, I was just going to ask for probably what I'm going to get from Christian's link. I'm just having a hard time finding what I consider decent information for my microphone and audio input needs. So I'll look at Christian's link when he sends it, and hopefully that gives me a starting point.
Do that and talk to us too. We're available anytime, by any means. One of us is, at least. So talk to us. Get your assignment in as soon as you can. And you know, it's a provisional assignment, and we might suggest revisions, other purchase options that you hadn't considered, etc. So don't worry about what you don't know. Just forge ahead at this stage. Ma?
As a leftover from Monday, because I haven't heard Thursday's study group yet, we were to talk about the microphones that we have. And now, are microphones on like digital recorders and such, are they... not the dynamic, but the other kind, the name escapes me, I'm truly sorry. But would they be that kind of microphone?
Usually they would be that kind of microphone, yes. But you would be well advised to check, because obviously we don't know the type of recorder that you have. But I'm pretty sure, yes, they would be that type of microphone.
How can you know? How can you check?
It should be in the recorder's specifications. You could check on forums about that recorder. How does it sound to you compared to the microphones that were demoed in last Monday's lecture? What kind of setup is it?
Okay. All right. I was just curious. And then just basically, I will be sending in the cable assignment and the other one, the microphone assignment, probably by Wednesday of this week. I have to go back home and regroup and everything, but I'm planning on working on some of those things tomorrow afternoon and Wednesday afternoon.
That's great. The latter part of the assignment requires a little research, so before you submit it, you may want to get in touch with us or check out the link that Christian will provide, or do some of your own research elsewhere. Audio Discuss is also a useful resource. That is the list which contains all current students and all past students, so you may get more wisdom from that as well.
And for those who haven't kept track of the list, you know, let us know, email us if you're confused about that, because it's very important, especially since we're starting to do work in regards to projects and things soon, that you are able to communicate with both lists, because they're very valuable resources.
Yes. Also, make sure, Mar, that you do listen to that study group, Thursday study group, because that will have a lot of things about like microphone accessories and things like that, especially at the beginning. So some of that stuff that, you know, might help you and aiding you with your research might actually be answered.
Including stuff in your assignment about the microphone accessories you would require will get extra brownie points.
Yeah. Yes, I was planning on listening to it tomorrow on the plane on the way home.
Awesome. Did anybody have anything else?
Any discoveries you made about your equipment in the process of research? Any things you found that you've wanted that you don't have? Was this assignment helpful? Things like that.
Sure. Wish I had a good cash flow so I could start buying some of these mics I've been looking at and research.
Beware of the audio gear hole. Better gear does not necessarily make better productions. Like, yes, up to a point. If you want to produce something professional, you must own a minimum standard of gear. But after that, it's about honing your craft more than it is about buying the next best thing. Like, buying the next best thing would make production easier, but again, it's a law of diminishing returns, and you can get to a point where you focus much more on the next plugin you want to buy or the next fancy gadget you want to buy than actually making good audio.
I was on a audio group once, and I was complaining about the signal to noise ratio of some part of my audio chain. And then someone points out to me, it's like, do you realize the signal to noise ratio of the consoles and the tape machines at Motown? You know, a few people may have heard of that. Just, you know, one of the major musical production places from the probably the 60s through the 80s, you know, all kinds of artists went through Motown. Lots of number one hits came out of there. The equipment was horrible compared to even some of the most poor quality stuff of today. But the way it was used was such that they made some good stuff.
I read some wisdom on a forum once, which said that if you gave Jimi Hendrix a really crappy guitar, he could still make good music out of it. So, you know, worry more about the quality of your product than the quality of the equipment on which you are making it. Up to a point. Like, you're never going to produce professional results with the headset you guys have seen me come on with. You're never going to produce professional results with an internal laptop microphone. It's just not going to happen unless you're a sound designer and you're not using the sound for what it is. You're mincing it into something else. But yeah, worry more about what you put out than what you put it out on.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started on this lecture. Feel free, guys, to ask questions after each section, because this can get a bit daunting. One of the things, well, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about what Windows audio subsystems are. This is very different from Mac, but I'm not going to cover Mac because I don't have one. And this course doesn't cover Mac. So this is more for the Windows side. But we're going to talk about what they are, how they're used, why we use them, or why we have used them. But we're also going to give you a little bit of a history lesson to kind of get you to how we got here with the current ones that we use. And we're going to talk about how to navigate your sound settings for those of you who may not have ever seen the sound properties console thing before. So that's what we're going to try to get through today. So if anyone has any questions about stuff, feel free to ask. So first, we're going to talk about what an audio subsystem is. Which, basically, what an audio subsystem is, it's basically a way that computer drivers can interface with audio hardware from the computer side. So a lot of these programmers or driver manufacturers will program things that will help you interface with your audio's hardware and help do your digital to analog conversions and all that stuff. And there are different types of subsystems. Some are better than others. Some people may have and others people may not have, depending on what sound cards or interfaces you have. Can anyone, we'll go back to this on Thursday, but can anyone actually say what an interface is?
Christian.
An audio interface is basically sound card, an external sound card.
Yeah, essentially it can have multiple inputs and outputs, some of them inputs and outputs. Some of them have drivers. Some of them work by plug and play, which is just basically by plugging it into your USB port and then it works.
Or FireWire port.
Or FireWire, correct. So that's basically the short answer of what it is. We'll go more into that, the difference between that and a mixer and how an interface can be a mixer and things like that on Thursday. Questions?
Damien and then Ma.
If an interface is only a sound card, then why do they call an interface not a sound card?
Well, it can be a sound card, but it can also be a mixer. Some interfaces are mixers. Some interfaces are big boxes with knobs on them, so they're not exactly just sound cards. Some interfaces look like they are multiple sound cards because of how Windows addresses them. I'll actually show you what I mean by that. But is actually one big box and not one thing at all. So to call it a sound card would be wrong, if that makes any sense.
Ah, so it's just literally something that connects to your computer as an audio device.
Correct. Essentially.
Yes.
Aha, got it.
Mar?
So is an internal sound card not an interface then?
An internal sound card actually is a type of interface, yes.
But it's not known generally as an audio interface in the professional sense. So if you have a C Media chip or a Realtek or, heaven forbid, SoundMax or AC97, while they technically can perform some of the functions of an audio interface, they're not something outside of the computer with a fairly reasonable amount of connections on it, which are, you know, prosumer or professional.
Marion had a question.
Does the interface also convert an analog signal to a digital signal?
Yes, most do. The reason I say most is because you can get some that are like super snobtastic interface from, you know, Expense Incorporated. And you can spend thousands of dollars on a box that just takes the digital signal and makes it analog.
Christian.
I wanted to say, as I said, that it's not a sound card. I had to answer my phone. The difference between an interface and sound card is that interfaces usually have, they are external, they are ASIO compatible mostly, and for example, Motu can be also a mixer. They are considered mixers, and they are more expensive, and most of them have phantom power. So they are not just sound cards. Like someone said, calling an interface to be just a sound card is wrong.
Monica.
Christian said a term, like three letters. What is that? And Derek talked about the sound card. What if you do have one of those dreaded SoundMax cards, as you called it?
To address the second question first, you can replace them with an audio interface. Some people are so eccentric about this, in fact, that they will go into the BIOS of their computer and disable the onboard sound from their motherboard. However, we can't really do that. It is more advantageous for us to take our screen reading software and put it somewhere else, like on those onboard sound chips, to clear off space on our interface.
And I'm going to talk about why that is in a while, why that's very, very important. Because as Derek said, you want to get an interface, but maybe you don't have one, or maybe you just don't have the money to get one. Or maybe you can get a cheap interface to work on stuff and use your onboard card, as he said. But there are reasons you don't want to put everything all on the one sound card, or reasons that if you do, things might break. And we'll get to that. So I'm going to start with a bit of a history lesson. As we were just talking about subsystems, they're basically drivers and APIs or programming interfaces that will actually interface with your audio hardware. Windows, over the years, has made several of these to help the average user interface with the hardware that they have or the hardware that was provided in their computer. It's worth noting that consumer hardware is very different from professional hardware. And some of the stuff that consumer hardware may have, professional hardware may have or may not have, and vice versa. So the first thing we're going to talk about is talk about the first subsystem, which was known as Windows Multimedia Extension. Those of you who have actually used digital audio workstations before and have kind of messed around with things, you guys may have seen things like Windows MME or Windows Wave RT or Windows Wave Out. This is a very basic audio subsystem that interfaces with your hardware. It's gotten a little bit of an upgrade since when it first came out, because when it first came out, back in the Windows 3.1 days, it could only play one stream at a time at two channels, and 44.1K HD was its optimum. So if you have music playing and then you have a screen reader and you're theoretically trying to use both things at once, what do you think is going to happen in this particular configuration?
Monica?
You won't be able to hear both clearly, or it'll all be on one card.
Okay, let's just take Damien's answer and then Christian's before we hear back from Jessica.
One of them is going to cut out.
Christian?
Same I wanted to say. It would be, for example, the music is playing and you wake up some keystroke that, for example, FDA says. Music cuts out, FDA says it, and then music continues. Or the other scenario, sound card totally ignores the screen reader and continues playing music.
In this particular configuration, the stream that grabbed it first will continue to keep it. And so if you're trying to use NVDA or you're trying to use whatever it is that you're trying to use, most times in this configuration, it's not going to work. Now, you can do that a bit better nowadays because there is legacy support for Wave or MME. The problem with this particular subsystem, and with all the subsystems, really, is that it has a very big amount of latency. Can anybody tell me what latency is?
Clement.
It would be the time it takes for the signal to go from your device into the other end of it, which would be the converter and your subsystem.
Marion?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too, and it creates a delay in what you hear back to you.
See, the reason why I'm asking for multiple answers to these questions is that these are quite complicated topics, and while one of you may get it right, another of you may add a little more. And yeah, the delay is very important from the practical end for reasons which
absolutely
Jessica will explain or will become clear in future modules. Christian?
The time between you invoke some playing command or whatever, or a MIDI controller, and the time between it and the actual playback.
Yeah, between the three of you, I'd say you nailed it.
Derek, sorry, I'm laughing because he sent me a message basically saying he's about to break my latency demo, essentially. But he's basically saying that they have bigger latency with direct sound, which we'll get to in a second, than Wave. And sometimes that actually happens. And there's a reason for that. And I'll get to you in a second. So all of you guys are right on the money. You know, it's all about how long it takes for a signal to go into your audio interface and then through it and then out into your computer and then back to you. And how much of a delay it will actually have when it comes back to you. And you can actually hear that delay sometimes if you monitor it or hear it through listens. And I'll explain what some of those are when we get into the sound applet. So the thing to note about latency, it may not matter to you, or it may not matter as much to you, but then again, it may. If you're doing a vocal performance and you're doing a lot of live vocal performance, latency may very much matter to you. If you're doing even some post-production of vocal performances, maybe you're doing some voiceovers, latency may matter to you. If you're doing sound design, it may not. It may. I don't know because I don't do sound design. but it may not. If you're working with MIDI, which we won't cover here, it will definitely matter to you. So it's very important when you use these sound systems and learn how they work that you keep an eye on its latency.
Latency doesn't matter if you're a sound designer. Well, it matters a little bit because if you're doing edits and things, there is a gap between when you press the stop button and when things actually stop. So if you're doing fine edits, things, and you want to line things up and you want to make sure things stop when they should, that can be a problem. But usually latency doesn't matter nearly as much to certainly the sound designer I do as it would to a live performer or vocal performer or something like that, someone trying to cue up a multi-track production with live elements.
Noel has a question.
I do. Am I coming through okay? Because my audio interface decided to reset itself and I had to set everything back up again.
Oh, well, you did well. So,
oh,
yeah.
Well, that's good. Because I had to fix all my trims and everything. That's the fun of switching from USB to FireWire. My question is, wouldn't audio... So if you're doing sound design and you used, say, a synthesizer, MIDI, I know it's we're talking MIDI, but I mean, that if you use that to construct a sound, wouldn't, I guess maybe it still wouldn't matter too much because it doesn't matter when you're playing the sound. I don't know.
I think it would be like if you're making cool laser noises or sweepy noises or some other far out sound effect, it wouldn't be as critical. But like right. If you were playing Feralise and you wouldn't hear the music you were actually playing on your keyboard for a half second, and so you're playing ahead, but the notes you're hearing lag behind, that's when it would matter a
right.
lot. But if you're just going with a synthesizer or something, there you go. You can use that for free, Justin. There's a little face synthesizer noise. Then, you know, if that's a little bit off while you're putting that in, it wouldn't be as detrimental because you could move it
wherever
you wanted it.
Matter when it starts, stops, or whatever.
Yeah, because you can move it wherever you want it.
I know what latency is. I was just kind of wondering, you know, about that. And you answered my question. Thanks.
Well, I just wanted to thank Derek for the Deagle patch.
Yeah, you're welcome. if that gets anywhere, let me know. And, you know, you're welcome.
Attribution will be provided.
Oh, fun. Okay.
make sure you keep it in the podcast, seriously.
Oh, no. I plan on it. I think.
Clement.
Oh, no, I was just going to kind of add on to what Dirk said, is if you're a musician and if you're playing something, or actually, like, as a musician and a vocalist, I do both, and if you get latency from either the instrument or your mic, because you have to wait, at least I do, I kind of feel this need to wait until I get the sound back before I continue, and if you're trying to work with a metronome or whatever, that really messes you up. So I'd say, with a synthesizer, if you're trying to keep it in time with either a multi-track production or if you're going with multiple live sources, it's definitely relevant. But yes, as if you're doing something like Derek's face synthesizer noise, then it wouldn't matter as much.
The other time it does matter too, as Clement said, with vocals, both live and post-produced, because live vocals more, because you're singing live, you're wanting to make sure everything's on time, in time, etc. Post-produced, it doesn't matter as much, but it can get annoying, because what can happen, and what used to happen to me, was my stuff, when I would record, would be like a half second behind, and so then I'd have to nudge everything all the time, and that was really annoying. So it's important to kind of keep an eye on latency and what subsystem you're using when it comes to latency, and how, when you're in your digital audio workstation, how you can change to the different interfaces and what options those interfaces are going to give you. So Derek's going to demo how latent for him MME or wave out, it depends what sound system you're using and how it reads, but that's how you would see it, is wave out or Windows MME. If you're using virtual audio cable, it's Windows MME. If you're using Reaper, it's wave out. If you're using Goldwave, I don't remember. Actually, I don't think Goldwave lets you do it. I think Goldwave only does direct sound and Wasapi, which I'll get to in a second.
So I just want to ask, Clemens says no, it doesn't for the recording. I just want to ask before Derek gets to the demo, Jess said latency for him. He's going to demonstrate the latency for him. Well, we all have wave out, we all have MME, right? Why isn't it the latency for all of us? No.
Well, you might have a different interface. say you might be using USB versus FireWire, I think that has a little bit different latency, and it also could be your processor and that pipeline that goes, I think, that's something.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, no, that's
these are
that's
all
exactly
these
right.
are all variables yeah. that are correct. Mm-hmm. These are all correct all. Variables.
So let's say we have the same interface, we have the same processor. What else might cause latency to differ between machines? Damien?
Any software that you might be running on top of it.
That is exactly right. And a very important point, whatever interface you're using and whatever subsystem you use to get the best latency, don't run anything else other than your DAW, your audio editing application. Close Twitter, turn the internet off. Make sure your hard drive's defragged. Make sure Dropbox is off and all that resource-hogging stuff, which Derek probably has not done. So this latency won't be optimum for him. Maybe he has. And then you will get the best latency per Windows subsystem, per interface.
Yeah, I killed all that stuff. It's just a habit. I kill it before class. Especially because if I'm demoing something, the last thing I need is someone to say hello in a direct message during class or, you know, something like that. It's
or
no
Twitter
good.
Sounds.
Yeah, it's... equally awkward.
Someone had a question. Mar.
Yes. Are some instances of latency, if I'm understanding what it is, it's kind of that echoing back, right? When you're in a listening thing, that's what you covered when I said you answered my question. Are some instances of that unavoidable?
In a lot of cases, yes. With most consumer pieces of equipment, yes. It's unfortunately the way it is. It's the nature of the beast of the particular audio subsystem that that device uses. Even in very professional situations, there will be some sort of latency. The latency may be so small that you don't perceive it, but it technically exists. Any digital audio piece has latency. This mixer is a digital mixer. It has latency. It is less than a millisecond of latency, but it technically has it because it's crunching numbers. Audio in, it does things to it. The audio comes back out. Those things take time to be done. And so there is latency, but it's not perceived latency. So every digital device has it. If it bothers us or not, if it's noticeable or not, that is up for discussion, but it exists. So shall I demo Wave?
Why not?
All right. I have two signal paths running. One is through Reaper and one is direct to you. So you're going to hear both. So you can appreciate what it sounds like. And now you're hearing both. At least you theoretically should. Both the mic and Reaper coming back through the computer. Do you hear the latency between the two?
Yeah, it sounds like 100 ms.
Yep, that's about it. Now if I... Was it Clement that said the metronome?
Yes.
Yeah, if I turn on a metronome and I just mute my direct, so you're just hearing what comes through the computer. One, two, three, four. This delay is kind of poor. Five, six, seven, eight. This offset makes me late. Oh, no. Sound off and so on. Three. That's not working out too good. So that's kind of a problem in that case. So there is Wave. Now you can do stuff about the latency problem with these audio subsystems. But there's a problem if you try to make certain subsystems go below what they can deal with. And I'm just putting in some values that will dramatically decrease the latency with the Wave to show you that it's possible. See, that's a lot better. There's just a kind of a major problem with this particular deal here, this particular setup. Who's noticing that, yeah, it's a lot less latent, but what the problem is?
A lot of your audio is being cut out.
Yeah, because there's not enough. Wow, that's cool. That's a neat effect. There, Justin, there's another thing you could chop up and use. Yes, that's right. There's not enough of a buffer to make that usable. So while it's a lot less latent, it's completely useless. In fact, the metronome's not even working properly. I can't do the metronome with the proper tempo. It's breaking up that badly. That is a problem.
Wow.
So we're not going to have that anymore. Can we just get rid of that? Yes, we can. Okay, that's fabulous. All right, cool. So there's Wave. However, that having been said, with all these subsystems, what is an advantage of having a buffer that's pretty significant? The advantage is, if you have something that's running on your machine, there's a greater chance that your machine can tolerate that background process more because there are more buffers. If you're getting it as awesome as it can get, then your machine better be as awesome as it can be and stay that way. You also, with this particular audio subsystem, have the advantage of being able to record from one device and hear it on another device. So you're not just bound to use the same interface for recording and playback. You can pull from one and push to another one. So there you go. At a glance, there's my demo submitted for your approval of MME.
That was actually some pretty good latency for MME, in all honesty. Wow.
That's why I wrote you. I said, we got a problem because MME's kind of rocking over here.
Yeah, that actually was wow.
It's fine with the XUSB and the Delta. They're both kind of cool. So I was going to try to find the worst one to support the high latency problem that was proclaimed. But I didn't have one. They were both good.
Isn't direct sound worse?
Yes, by a lot.
That's what I thought.
It is, to me, worse.
It is in a lot of people's cases. But in some people's cases, it actually isn't. Now, speaking of direct sound, that's what we're going into next. Oh, Gianluca?
Yeah, basically... the problem that I had with Wave or Wave Out is that the latency starts like the direct one and then it can be increasing. So that's what happened to me. So as I was using that, I was noticing that, hey, it was not that bad at the time. So, you know, I had to, you know, unarm and arm the track again and then reset it. But that's the problem that I had with Wave, which I didn't have with direct sound, which probably you're going to get now.
So
you're going to get two now.
People started deciding that they wanted to be able to hear multiple sounds at once, and they wanted to be able to play games in their high-fidelity computers running Windows 95, except not. But they did want to play games. So something came out called Direct Sound, which helped to support these games with multiple sounds and streams. And Windows also came out with the WDM, or Windows Driver Model, which allowed interfaces to make drivers in order to have people install them on their computers to interface with their hardware. So in the beginning days of Direct Sound, you had this cool problem, or maybe not, where multiple streams could stream, but they would all stream at the first sample rate that the stream grabbed at. So again, let's go back to your screen reader and your music scenario. Let's say you have nice, clear, crystal 44.1 music, because that's what it was at the time. And it grabs the sound card first. Well, if you have your screen reader going through that same sound card, it will be fine. It will work. Nothing will break. Everything will sound crystal clear. But what do you think might happen if your screen reader grabbed the sound card first, and while your screen reader was reading, music started playing? Damien?
You'd get low-quality music.
Correct. Your screen readers, I believe a lot of them, I think Eloquence is sampled at like 22.5 or something like that. So it's sampled lower than your music would be sampled at. And so what would happen is you'd be, for those of you who had those old Sound Blaster cards or things like that, you'd be reading something in JAWS and you'd be going along and then you decide you want to hear some music. But then you go into Windows Explorer and you get your music queued up and you're like, control key, control key, control key. So that, you know, JAWS doesn't talk before your music does. So
I think Eloquence is actually 11.025.
Oh yeah, maybe it is. You might be right. I would not be surprised. So that was the problem that happened at first with Direct Sound. Now they fixed that to a point in Windows 98 and XP by introducing what is called KMixer. KMixer basically takes everything it can in all your streams and samples it to an average sample rate. But it's very quick and very dirty. So if you're trying to get all of these things sampled to 44.1, some of your stuff may alias if they don't support that many frequencies. Whoops.
You can also lock a device with KMixer to a specific sample rate. Or to make it more of a broad term, in Windows, you can lock a device to a specific sample rate. And if you're using direct sound, KMixer will make that sound play at that sample rate by adjusting its sample rate up or down, but doing it in a very quick way, and as she said, in a very dirty way. So there's very little anti-aliasing that goes on. There's a little bit, but it's not particularly good.
Yep. And some people liked this more because, like I said before, you could hear your multiple streams, you could record from multiple devices. Question.
I'm not sure if this is a software or a hardware thing or what it is, but why is it that sometimes if you resample something, it will either alias or change speed?
All right, well, if you change speed, you are setting the sample rate. You are not resampling it. So if you have something at 22.5, so 22,050 hertz or 22.5 kilohertz, and you set the sample rate to 44.1 kilohertz, which is 22.5 times 2, you are using twice as many samples per second. Therefore, you play the audio that was recorded at 22.5K twice as fast. It's the same concept of the old NLS tapes. 15/16 IPS, regular players play at 1 7/8, so the stuff plays twice as fast. When you resample with something that has very poor anti-alias filter or none at all, you are creating or breaking a bunch of harmonics on the upper side of what the new sample rate can handle. Does that help?
I think so.
So if you resample with anti-alias filtering, though, that goes through and it filters out any sound whose harmonics would create aliasing.
So the splitting effect is just playing at the wrong sample rate. Resampling is actually changing the audio so it conforms to a new sample rate.
Correct.
Got it.
So with direct sound, some sound cards allowed you to get directly to the hardware and use kernel streaming, which basically took direct control of the device. Before I go into that, Derek's going to show you his latency demo with direct sound.
All right, so here we go. With direct sound.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I've got a problem.
What buffer did you say is that?
It's just the default, so it's 1024. I'm going to see how low we can go with these buffers before we have problems.
Let's say 256.
Yeah, we'll try that one. Because right now, as it stands with the metronome, 1, 2, 3, 4. This delay is really poor. 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh my gosh, this is not great.
It's bad.
All right, so make that go away. All right. Now, stop.
Okay.
256. See what we can get away with in reducing these buff errors.
Yeah.
8 by 256. So we're cutting this by a fourth. And what are we? Hey, excuse me. All right. Well, that's not working out. So 256 is not a thing. 12. Let's try
12. That'll work. I believe even 320 could work, even though it's not a proper, super proper value. But I believe 320 should work.
Actually, 384 is more of a happier thing that divides out better in the way these things work.
Yeah, I do 384.
Yeah. All right. No.
Nope.
Wow. Now we have some really cool imaging noises. It breaks.
Wow. And so you're using two cards, right? One card into another card, right?
No.
Oh, that's even worse. I mean, I thought you were using, like, you know, Mixer into Delta or something. I could try it. That could go worse, right? You know that.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're trying to get two things going at once.
I mean, to me, like, 384 would definitely work when I'm using, you know, like, Delta into Delta or, like, Sound Blaster into Sound Blaster. It didn't break that badly at 384, not even at 320, even if it's not super cool, but that'll work. Wave out, I could go probably 128. I don't know which you've used before with Wave out, but...
Yeah, 128 was fine with Wave.
Yeah.
Out of Mixer into Delta through direct sound, let's see what we get. No, that's a negative.
That's not working either. I thought so.
I
do. Can I ask you a question, Derek?
Sure.
Are you changing that in Reaper? I mean...
Yeah, all this is Reaper behind the scenes.
Okay. Because I remember I used Otchuk, and I remember when they switched to, like, you could pick direct sound versus kernel streaming. There were problems with that with JAWS, and so I always had to use direct sound, and pretty much had about that kind of delay. So I had to actually get good at listening to myself delayed, you know, a second or a half a second.
Yep.
And talk. And it, sometimes people, you can tell when they have it on because they're talking really slow.
Because it's disconcerting hearing yourself back. Or if they have really open headphones, you can hear it.
Yeah.
Come back through. For those who don't know, Oddsjuke was like the before Station Playlist Studio. It was a broadcast compress your music and stream and crossfade and things.
Kind of all the station playlist newfangled stuff. I hadn't gotten it yet.
Does that explain things, Gary?
I have no idea what they were talking about. They were having a conversation that was totally meaningless to me. I was doing okay up to the time when you were talking about the delay or the...
Latency.
Mm-hmm. I was doing fine then, and then they got into some discussion about all of those numbers, and I had no idea what the 256 and the 512 and...
Yeah, we kind of did jump ahead a bit there.
Well,
I was a bit confused because we didn't talk about buffers.
No, well, I sort of had mentioned them in the Wave audio demo. And so I was just sort of picking up where I had left off. But as a review, buffer is how much audio is sort of cached on your machine before it spits it back out so that you can play it safer. So if you have a processor or a machine that isn't exactly the best suited for audio, you can kind of get away with using it by having greater buffer size because it sort of holds more. And, well, what do you know, buffers more before it spits the audio back out, processed by the thing that you're using.
That I understand. Now, do I need to... Then you went on having a discussion. What were all the numbers about? The 256 and the 512 and all of that kind of stuff.
The number of buffers that existed.
That's the number of buffers, yeah. He's changing the amount of buffers that will hold audio in his digital audio workstation.
How many are they? Samples?
I think they are samples or blocks. Are they blocks?
Blocks. That's it. Blocks of So sample rate and bit depth make up a block. You can increase your sample rate, or excuse me, you can increase your
block size.
Decrease the buffers without touching the numbers. You can decrease the latency by increasing the block size. By increasing the sample rate. But that's where it gets a little bit like, what? It's like a seesaw for audio.
So
that's where it gets a little bit
weird. Basically saying is with these subsystems, it's trial and error. You put some numbers into your DAW and you generally go kind of in powers of two. So 256, 512, 1024, you know, that sort of thing. Generally, that's the easiest way to kind of set those. And you check with trial and error. And the smaller the number, the less latent it will be. But you have to be careful that it's not munching up so much processor that it's going to start breaking up your audio. I'm going to get to why Derek's direct sound was broken more than Wave Out in a second. Questions? Someone had some.
Adam had one.
The numbers that we're referring to, I think they refer to the buffer size, meaning how much can a buffer contain, right?
Yes.
Okay, somebody said it was the number of buffers. I don't think that's correct. I think it's the size.
No, you're right. I misspoke. You're right. It's the buffer size. That's exactly what the label is. There is a number of buffers that exist, and then the size of each. You're right. I misspoke there.
So just a quick way that I can explain it, maybe a buffer is like a bucket of sound. The buckets are kind of hitched together. They can be different sizes, which refers to the numbers we're talking about, 512, 256, 128, 64. Those numbers are computerish numbers, out of the scope of the class probably, but they're just numbers. So, you know, bigger the size, the bigger the bucket, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. And possibly the more latent, but the good news is that it would process more audio, and so it won't break up as much. It won't lose or hiccup as much audio. So you have to find a compromise between latency and buffer size.
You can carry more audio with a bigger buffer size because the buckets are bigger. But because they're bigger, they're heavier and it takes longer to get them there.
Now, Derek's direct sound latency was pretty bad, wasn't it? There's a reason for that. When Direct Sound came out, they started introducing what was called shared audio and exclusive audio, but in this term, it wasn't called exclusive. In Direct Sound's term, later on, in order to bypass K-Mixer and all of the sampling junk it would do in order to get the average sample rate, sound cards and programs introduced something called direct kernel streaming. Direct kernel streaming allowed you to take hold of a device exclusively, which means you could run stuff through that device and lock it to a sample rate and access lower latencies in direct sound with kernel streaming. However, we said with K-Mixer that the device could be shared, right? We said that with K-Mixer, everything could get sampled or average sampled or whatever nicely and work together and play along. What do you think might happen in kernel streaming if two things try to grab the same device?
There might be some kind of conflict. It's impossible because if a device, if for example one program wants sample rate of 44,000 and the other wants for example 96,000 and both want the full control of the device, I think one program would not work.
Correct.
I think that it would rule, it would be the same principle like in one stream, so as it had just one, it could just stream one piece of audio at a time. The first program which took control would gain that, this control, and the other one wouldn't be allowed, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So when people wanted kind of less latent direct sound, they would use kernel streaming with the program they were using to grab it and get at the hardware itself instead of having to get processed through K-Mixer and all the Windows software. The problem is that not all of the programs back in those days supported direct kernel streaming. And so that's why a lot of times you have very latent direct sound unless you can get to that.
Before someone else asks, can I ask something?
Sure.
Is this direct kernel streaming, does it allow Skype to mess up with sound and with volume? Is it the way in which, for example, Skype or some other programs can control the volume of your mic or even of your speakers? Is it the way?
Skype is actually using, I think it's, there's more complicated things with that with Skype. Like Skype has other things that control your system, even though you tell it not to. You can totally go and tell it not to, and it still will anyway, but it has nothing to do with your audio system. So that's direct sound in a nutshell. I tell you about direct sound because some of you, hopefully none of you, but some of you, because it's still around, may still be using Windows XP. If you are using Windows XP, this is what you use by default. Damien.
I'm very surprised to learn about the latencies in direct sound, because I know a lot of games tend to use direct sound, even audio games that obviously rely on the audio for feedback and things like that. If that's the case, why is it the case that people aren't dying all the time because they're not able to press the key, you know, to let go of keys or change keys before the latency kicks in?
Okay, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, this latency that you're hearing from all these audio subsystems gets cut in half when you're just playing or just recording, because you're hearing sound in, the computer deals with it, and then turns around and produces the output. So if you're just doing one or the other, you get it cut in half by default. And for another thing, because you have the sounds already on your hard drive, and because direct sound is generally aware of its own latency, it can actually, in some cases, anticipate what's going to happen. So if a game says, if they press this key, they're going to die. Have this ready to play. Oh, they pressed it, they're done. Then direct sound can come up with that pretty quickly because it can look ahead.
If you have in your older sound cards, even in some of the newer ones, if you have like the hardware acceleration checkboxes and things like that checked as well, it will help direct sound not fall over so much.
Interesting.
Now, with Windows Vista, Windows was basically saying, man, all these users are having so much trouble with these sound devices and sound schemes and sound systems, and we have to all like make everyone write drivers and things for our APIs. Maybe we should come up with some kind of better user standard and better plug-and-play standard. And lo and behold, to compete with Mac, they came out with the Core Audio APIs. And these are four different APIs that all work on different parts of Windows. This is starting from Windows Vista upwards, by the way. But the one we're going to focus primarily on, because it's the one that we interface with when we use our workstations, when we use our speech, when we use virtual audio cable, when we use media players, is called Windows Audio Session Automatic Programming Interface, or WASAPI for short.
Automatic or application?
Oh, maybe it is application. You're right.
There's a bad Japanese cuisine joke in there somewhere.
So.
Or WASAPI. You know, it could be like Mufasa. Or, you know.
Adam had a question.
Yeah, this might be getting ahead a little bit or whatever, but I thought I'd ask now. I thought that ACO was preferred scheme to use.
It is, but if you don't have ACO, we'll talk about ACO in a bit, this isn't too bad. There's some downsides to it that we'll also talk about, but if you are aware of those and can work around them, this WASAPI thing is pretty cool.
So what WASAPI basically allowed people to do is it allowed people to have more direct control of their devices, but still being able to share. So people are able to still record multiple streams like K-Mixer, but the sample rate could easily be locked and the screen readers won't resample things if it catches first. And the algorithms used for resampling things to an average sample rate are less dirty than K-Mixer. For purposes of people just wanting to know information, it's called the Windows Audio Engine, but you don't necessarily need to know that to get through this class. Just know that it is similar to K-Mixer in that it will mix and kind of crush together your audio and your different sample rates and bit depths, but it's better about it. It won't break it as bad. Question. Damien.
Is that what WASAPI uses? Because I often find that it ends up resampling itself as you end up changing voices.
I honestly don't know.
I honestly don't know either. That I can't tell you. I think WASAPI 4 uses direct sound, honestly, I think, if I remember.
Yeah, I know 4 does. You're right. Because I remember back in the day trying to run WASAPI stuff and DirectX came up missing. And I'm like, what's this DirectX thing? Whatever, I'll go grab it. And then my machine didn't complain about it.
Oh, Mar had a question.
How can you tell what type of, I don't even know, I don't understand all this, you're right, you're losing me very much, but how do you know what type of, whatever this is called, you have?
Audio subsystem?
Yeah.
Most programs let you pick. TeamTalk is one example. If you go into its preferences with F4, and you go to the sound system tab, you will actually see the available audio subsystems that we're talking about. And then you can pick your device for playback and recording that you want to use. Goldwave is the same thing. Reaper is the same thing. Media players like Winamp and FooBar have output plugins that address different audio subsystems. There's one for direct sound, there's one for wave, and so on. Programs that don't let you pick generally these days under 7 use K-Mixer and just show up where they will and you get what you get.
The thing to keep in mind in this mode, which is called shared mode, where the mixer is mixing everything together, the thing to keep in mind, if you have your card locked at 44,100 hertz and you play something at 48,000 hertz, you may not notice aliasing. Maybe. But you may notice it if you play something that's at a higher sample rate or at a lower sample rate because your card is locked to that. You can change it in mmsys.cpl, which I'll show you that once I get through all this stuff. You can change it, and that's why it's important that we're learning this, because you can lock your cards to a sample rate. I'm going to repeat that again. You can lock your cards to a sample rate. So if you're playing something, make sure that it is at the sample rate that your card is locked at, or that it's not too far above the sample rate that it's locked at.
I would amend that by saying if you are playing something to which you want to listen critically.
Yes.
Ma?
Sorry, I'm so... But what are most factory defaults? Do most systems come locked, or do you lock the? Do you lock them yourself?
A lot of them nowadays, if you buy a computer, come set at 48,000. Now, you can change it. As I said, it's very easy to change. It's on a combo box. You can change it, and it'll change. It'll show you all the sample rates that it supports. It's the same for external interfaces as well. If you're using a Motu, if you're using a Focusrite, if you're using any of these things, the sample rates that it can support will show up in Windows to a point. The reason why I say to a point is because in some of these external interfaces, you actually have to go into a console or a control panel and set the sample rate. That isn't a Windows specific
stock thing.
Right.
It comes with your card or interface.
So if you're using an internal sound card, or if you're trying to set something in your computer, or you're using maybe a USB microphone that might happen to have a small interface on it, you'll probably be okay being able to change your sample rates in Windows. You may not if you're using a bigger interface. So that was shared mode. Now, we talked about direct kernel streaming and what it did in direct sound, yes? So Windows wanted to keep that. Windows wanted us to still be able to grab our cards and use them specifically for whatever it is we wanted to use them for, to grab them fundamentally from the hardware level and bypass all of Windows's mixing. This mode is called exclusive mode. However, there is a caveat, well, a couple caveats to exclusive mode. The first is that there's actually an exclusive mode and an exclusive polled mode, which in polled mode, it actually gives an application preferential treatment, essentially. So the card is still in shared mode, theoretically. But if the application is in exclusive polled mode, which I think that got rid of actually in Windows 8, I don't remember, 8 or 10, but Windows Vista and 7 have it. And if that card is in that mode and an application is allowed to be in that mode, the application will take preferential control of that card. In exclusive mode, just the regular exclusive mode, the card is controlled by an application that grabs it first. Again, like in kernel streaming. So sharing it will not be an option. This is why Derek and us, we were telling you that putting your screen reader on another sound card is important if you can. Because if you have your card in exclusive mode, in Goldwave and Reaper and whatever thing you're using, and you try to get your screen reader to play something or read something at you while Reaper or Goldwave or whatever it is that's controlling the card has it, any number of things can happen. Your screen reader can stop working. Your stuff can get sampled up or down. A good example of that, recently I was trying to actively make my card crash because I have a very strange interface. I will get to that in a bit. But basically I was trying to make my card crash, and I finally got Goldwave in exclusive mode in Wasapi doing its thing. I forgot that I left it that way at one point, and then I made my NVDA read me something, and everything
got pitched down
because everything tried to get sampled at 48,000 hertz and was fighting for control of the exclusive device.
NVDA won. Now, having said all that, why, if the thing is so volatile and it could crash so easily and break stuff, would you want to use a sound device or a group of sound devices? Because you can, provided they're all locked to the same sample rate, grab from one and send that to another. Why would you want to do that? What would be the purpose? The purpose is, if you don't mind having one or more devices sync to the same sample rate and lock to exclusive mode, basically on any interface, if you do this, or on any group of interfaces, you can get this kind of latency, which is kind of awesome. Like I said, the compromise is you have to have everything locked to the same sample rate. And if that's okay, then cool. Can you hear the latency? Hear how it's barely there? It doesn't even sound like a delay. It sounds almost like a cone filter, like we were talking about the phase kind of thing.
Yeah, and just.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can.
If you don't mind that compromise and those limitations, then you can get this kind of latency, which is kind of nice.
Johanna says, nice chorus. Now, this is, as Derek said, probably the best you're going to get if you're trying to use just the internal hardware of your computer or even some consumer hardware or anything that does not support ACO. What in the world is ACO? Does anyone want to guess what ACO might be?
ACO. Maybe. I know that ACO is a protocol created by Steinberg, used by professional audio interfaces. It's kind of a standard for audio engineering today if you want to work with professional equipment. But for abbreviation, what it means, maybe, I really don't know. Nothing comes to my mind.
Audio streaming input / output.
I wanted to say something with input output, but I wasn't sure.
It's pretty accurate. Steinberg came out with this cool interface for hardware because they wanted to compete basically with direct sound, you see. They wanted to compete with kernel streaming. And they wanted to give professional hardware manufacturers the edge. So they came out with this thing called ACO, which is a lot like Wasapi's exclusive mode, but it's less latent and you will only find it on professional equipment. It gives direct access to the hardware, so it doesn't go through any mixers. It gives you direct access to all your inputs and outputs on your interface, but it also has, as I said, multiple inputs and outputs sometimes, so you can actually sometimes put other things on the outputs in order for your screen reader to come through or whatever. Now, we recommend those of you who have ACO when you're using your workstation to use this because it is the least latent. How latent? Well, Derek?
There's my ACO latency.
Wow. Oh, it's D3PO.
Yeah, much. Now, it's comparable to, or rather, with some interfaces, you can get even less than this. Some interfaces are ridiculously good to the point of where you just can't even tell. It almost sounds like a cone filter. It literally is milliseconds of latency. However, I don't have the probably thousands of dollars necessary to get something lower than this. I haven't experienced latency lower than this in most cases. I can get this a little bit lower, actually, to be fair. So to clarify, safely lower than this. So that is the thing. This kind of latency can be ran safely on my interface. And not only that, but I can record multiple tracks and have multiple effects running and still have this kind of low latency. The downside to ACO is that you have one device that you use at a time. So you cannot, I just made that go away. You cannot pull from one and push to another. The upside of ACO, although we do not recommend it, because there are interfaces where this will absolutely not work, is that you can use ACO and another audio subsystem. Now, will that compromise your performance on both? Yes, it will. Is it doable? Yes, it is.
So Desi had a question and Noel had a question.
Yes. Just check whether you can hear me to start with.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
When you're doing the example, you said you get hearing sound processed by a Reaper, and what's processing the other sound?
Nothing. You're getting two feeds.
So the feeds is to a speaker, straight from the microphone to the speaker, and the other one from
straight from the microphone Reaper to you, and the other one is from my interface to you.
Right. Got you.
Noel had a question.
Sure. I hope to turn my mute off. So, Derek, my question to you is, if you put an effect, I know this is not, we're not talking about effects, but if you were to put a reverb on to your signal, would the, so first question is, what was your buffer on that one? The second question is, if you put a reverb or something, would that further increase your latency?
Good question. First, the buffer size. As Adam pointed out, let's bring this back. There we go. Yes, see, now I can hear that. Is 64 versus 512 and all these numbers that are bigger. So the buffer size is 64. And you can, in some interfaces, get it down to 32. And if you are doing
32.
And if you can do 32 at something like 24-bit 96 kilohertz, this is 64 at 48. But if you can do 32 at 96, you can barely tell anything's there. You can barely hear it. And some people can, but they throw some money at their interfaces to do that. And as far as the reverb question, well, let's just add one, which we've done. And part of that is the slapback of the reverb, so it has reflections in it.
Not much difference.
So, if I take that away, that's what you get. Does that help?
That helps.
Cool.
Sounds like you're in the bathroom. A really big one.
Yeah.
No, it sounds more like a concert hall.
Oh, yeah.
So, with ACO, again, you know, this is mostly something that natively comes with professional interfaces. There is a program, though, that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. ACO for All basically allows cards that don't natively support ACO to have kind of an ACO experience. And Derek's going to kind of explain more about how that works.
Basically, ACO for All is this amazingly strange, semi-accessible hack that takes all of your devices on your system that you pick and locks them with kernel streaming. Hopefully they've updated ACO for All to use exclusive or WSAPI, you know, WSAPI exclusives are shared, but when last I looked about a year ago, it was still just using kernel streaming. So you get all of your devices that you're going to use into the same sample rate, and you can make what's called an aggregate device. And these fake aggregate devices can have multiple inputs and outputs that ACO can address. So if you have, say, two USB microphones connected, and you want one device to exist that pulls audio from both of these microphones, although they're totally separate things, you could theoretically use ACO for All to combine those two devices into one and record the result with any ACO-compatible program. Is this a bad idea? Yeah. Does it work? Sometimes. But if it happens to work for you, that does open up some routing possibilities and some interesting flexibility that you may not otherwise have. We're not touching ACO for All. It's something you can play with if you want, but I just thought you should know.
If you're going to use ACO for All, we certainly won't say no, but you get to keep both pieces if you break it.
If it breaks, yep.
So just keep that in mind if you want to use that. But really, guys, these subsystems are all different and have different types of latency, and it all depends what you can use and how you can use it and what kind of money you have to spend. If you can move, you know, your speech to like a USB sound card, or you can get one of these cheapy plastic USB sound cards, guys, and just put your screen reader on that. That way your main sound card or your main interface or your main whatever can be used for your workstation, your digital audio workstation. Mar had a question.
Well, I was just thinking, I had gotten this piece of software called Virtual Audio Streaming, I think was the name of it. And it was totally inaccessible. And I think that if anybody, you know, wants to try these virtual sound card things, you really have to watch, because a lot of them are not accessible. And I've heard this from a lot of other people.
So there's actually a really cool one called Virtual Audio Cable. I unfortunately do not have the time to do a study group on it this time around, because next week we're going into effects. It basically acts like your computer has more sound cards than it actually does. And you can send stuff to it and put stuff in exclusive mode and stuff like that, and be able to use it kind of like if you had a mixer. But it's a bit complicated to use if you've never used it before. Once you kind of use it, it's strangely simple, but it kind of takes that sort of using, and it doesn't help that while there is great documentation for Virtual Audio Cable, English isn't his first language, and so it kind of shows when you read his documentation.
And also, the thing about the Virtual Audio Cable manual is that it does assume a lot of technical knowledge. Like, it assumes this level of knowledge about Windows subsystems that we have just taught you. I didn't know about Windows subsystems when I acquired Virtual Audio Cable, and I flicked through the manual to try and solve some problems I was having. And it talked about things like KMixer and MME this and kernel streaming that. And I was completely baffled, and I put the manual away, and I just struggled through as best I could.
What I may do is put in our podcast a Virtual Audio Cable study group from semesters past for those who may want to use and learn virtual audio cable if it may help people?
Damien.
Yeah, I've actually got quite an interesting question. I have got an external sound card that I usually use for my music and things like that. If I wanted to, for example, put a screen reader on that and, for example, like, use my main card as a workstation or whatever, I mean, it'd be... How difficult would it be? Because obviously, I'd want to have screen reader on headphones, but I'd also want my output to be on headphones because I wouldn't want to disturb anybody that might be around me or whatever. How would you go about doing that without pretty much burdening your head?
Well, the easy way is you get a mixer. Should I say the easy / expensive way? The not so easy way, but still possible way, is you use things like virtual audio cable or similar things that allow you to mix multiple inputs and outputs together by using a repeater or a line cable and mix them all into your headphones.
All right, okay. So it's not a case of it has to come with a different card. It can come through the same thing as long as you've got something to mix it with.
Well, it needs to be on the same audio subsystem, ideally, with the same sample rate. So I would disagree with Jessica in that regard. I would say, however, that there are mixers that are under $50, which have horrible mic preamps in them, but they're good enough to take two line-level signals, glue them together, and give you a headphone jack to hear the result.
I've also been told of these. They're not headphone splitters, but they're essentially like headphone connector things, I guess, and you put two headphones or something into the same thing, and then they all come out of one headphone somehow. I don't remember what they're called, but
it's a headphone amp.
Carrie told me about them.
No, they're passive, because you can get headphone splitters that you can connect to one jack.
You're talking about like a headphone combiner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you have multiple inputs, like two inputs that go into one headphone.
Set of headphones.
Yeah.
Right.
I had one for about a day, and I figured out really quickly that because there was a different impedance on the two things I was trying to hear at the same time, it was cutting the volume of everything in half. And by the time I turned everything up to compensate for that, then stuff was distorting. And I'm like, eh. Which it could have been just the one that I had. Otherwise, they wouldn't sell, I would think. But B, again, one of those, you're welcome to try a passive solution. But if it breaks, well, Amazon returning is a thing. So you don't have to keep both pieces necessarily. But yeah.
I try to not necessarily discourage people from buying mixers and interfaces. I understand that that's what we kind of want, but I try to work on the premise that people don't have money. And so what I recommend isn't always something that Derek may recommend, because I know what it's like to be poor. So,
hey, I went to college. I had ramen and Texas Pete for a couple of days straight. I'm telling you, you know, you get creative when you have to, but
Nez has a question, and then Christian.
I think I heard you say we should possibly use our main computer for like the stuff with, you know, the music and probably the screen reader on your external sound card. Was that right? Or
if your external sound card is better than the one on your main computer, you're going to want to do your audio editing on that, especially if it supports ASIO. But if you just get a cheap little pair of USB headphones, or if you have a cheap sound card, then that's where you're going to want to put your speech, and you're going to want to have your audio editing and all the rest routed elsewhere to your main computer.
And we're going to get some sort of nudge as to what we've got and what we're using it. How are we using it? Are we?
The problem with us giving you nudges is that we each have different recommendations and different ways of doing things, as you just saw with mine and Derek's disagreement.
It's about what works for you. Like, for example, everyone recommends that you have your screen reader on a separate sound card. It's a good recommendation. Please do it. Please follow it. At the same time, I don't, because latency isn't a big deal to me, because the kind of files I work with, I don't need to worry about this sampling up and down as much as other applications, because I know that my file integrity is still preserved. I open up a 96,000 hertz sampled file, and I process it, and I save out a 96,000 hertz sampled file, even though none of my equipment can support 96K sample rates. So I don't really need to worry about latency, and I don't really need to worry about all this sampling stuff. It's just run sound card and deal with it. So everyone's setup is different. Everyone's workflow is different. Everyone is prepared to cut different corners. So it's hard to give specific nudges. We can just give guidelines.
Sure, but how are we going to know what we're doing is right or wrong then?
But that's what I'm saying. There isn't necessarily a right or wrong. There is a what is best. There is a what is ideal, what is preferred, and there is what works, and there is what doesn't. Those are your three options. What is preferred is that you have a really good sound card that is ACO compliant with as little latency as possible, your speech on another sound card that's rubbish, everything routed into a good pair of monitor headphones, and you can mix away to your heart's content. That's what's preferred, with everything at the same nice high sample rate, preferably in a multi-billion dollar Hollywood studio. But that's ideals. It's, you know, beyond that, it's whatever works for you, whatever you can afford, whatever gets good results for you.
You know, if you have what's called direct monitoring, which means that you plug a microphone into your interface, and without touching any software other than that which maybe configures the interface, you can hear your microphone. If the latency isn't so awesome and your gain staging is set properly, you can use direct monitoring if you're tracking, in other words, if you're recording. Now, that breaks if you're listening through an effect, but if you don't care, then there's another workaround. So it's what do I need and what can I do to get there?
I wanted to also agree with Justin. Justin's going to demo this more, but I wanted to show you guys something. So I actually use everything on my interface, or everything going through one interface as well, but there's a reason I do. It's the following. So I have my
sound tool of eight. Sound dialog, playback property page, select the playback device below to modify its settings, list, modu analog 1-2, modu audio wave for 64-bit, ready 1-5, modu main out 1-2, modu audio wave for 64-bit, ready 2-5.
So I'm going through all of my sound devices.
Modu phones 1-2, modu audio wave for 64-bit, default device 3-5, modu /PDIF 1-2, modu audio wave for 64-bit, ready 4-5, speakers, Realtek high definition audio, ready 5-5.
As you can hear, but I'm using all one interface, yet I have four separately addressable
modu analog 1-2
devices. That's why I use my screen reader and my sound and my everything else in the same interface, is because I can actually separately move stuff around to any of those four outputs. Now, not all interfaces have this. Derek's, I believe, doesn't. And he's got a cooler interface mixer thingy than me.
Yeah, the X32 is 32 in, 32 out, which is great, except most things see the first two channels and that's it. So, there's nothing you can generally do about that, unless you're using it with something like ACO, and then it's okay. But, yes.
So, I use the same interface as Jessica, and I have mine split off, so my system sounds are going into the computer sound card, and I just have an ear... but in, which could get irritating. I may change my mind, but I still see all of those sound cards. When you were going through the, when she was going through the sound, was that in Reaper, or was that just your sound, just the mixer?
That was just in the Windows sound control panel.
Right, okay.
Which, speaking of the Windows sound control panel, Justin?
So, let's have a look at the control panel, which Jessica just started to show you in more depth. Here's how I get to it. There are many different ways to get to it, but I am going to press my Windows key, and this is running Windows 8.1, so this may vary from OS to OS.
Edit blank menu. Sound forge. Sound record settings. 13 settings.
Type in
settings. 13
sound.
Settings. 13 settings. 13 sound. Sound. Sound.
And I wish my speech would stop jabbering. And I press enter on sound. So I press Windows key, type sound, go down to sound, press enter.
Unknown. Sound dialog. Playback property page. Select a playback device below to modify settings. List.
Real quick, Justin, you can also, guys, type Windows key and the letter R and type mmsys.cpl.
That's what I do.
Yep, absolutely. Or you can go to the control panel and you can find sound within that, and so on and so forth. I'm not a command line orientated person, so I do it this way. No right or wrong way. It's all good.
Speakers. Free audio box. USB audio. Ready 1-5.
Okay, so we have a list of possible devices I can play stuff through here. So I have speakers audio box. I have a Presonus audio box interface into which my microphone is connected.
Speakers/headphones. Realtek high definition audio. Default device 2 on 5.
Then I have my internal sound card. This is the speakers portion of it. And that is my default device. That is the device through which TeamTalk is outputting, through which everything is outputting, except my speech. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Line 1, virtual audio cable, ready 3 on 5.
This is virtual audio cable. This is basically a virtual mixer. This is what Jess was talking about.
Line 2, virtual audio cable, ready 4 on 5. Line 3, virtual audio cable, ready 5 on 5.
Okay, so those are my 5 potential devices. Now, you can hear my speech, and I can hear my speech. How is this happening? This is happening because I have my speech routed to virtual audio cable 2 and virtual audio cable routed both to me, my speakers, my default device, and indirectly to TeamTalk. So let's go and look at a few of the settings we have here.
Line 2, virtual audio cable. Line 1, virtual audio speakers/headphones. Realtek high definition audio. Default device 2 on 5.
For my default device.
Configure button alt properties button alt plus D.
So we press properties and we're going to be presented with a dialogue with a number of tabs in it.
Pressed. Speakers/headphones properties dialog. Property page LRLR analog DAC front. DAC edit selected speakers/headphones.
Okay, that's pretty much irrelevant, but thank you NVDA anyway.
Change icon button alt plus I.
Don't need to worry about that.
Controller information grouping Realtek high definition audio. Properties button alt plus D. Realtek button. Device usage. Combo box use this device. Enable. OK button. Cancel button.
So I discover I don't really care about anything on this tab.
Tab control. General tab selected.
So let's see what other tabs we have.
Levels tab selected.
Levels tab. Now I care very much about this tab.
Dialog 6. Realtek HD audio output grouping. Realtek HD audio output slider 6.
Okay. So from here I can control my balance and my volume. So my volume is on 6. 6 of 100.
Mute checkbox not checked alt plus M. Realtek HD or 5. 4, 3, 4.
There we go.
Mute checkbox not checked alt plus M.
Mute it, that would be a very bad idea.
Balance button alt plus B.
And there's the balance button.
Dialog 0, microphone grouping, microphone slider 0. Mute check balance button alt plus dialog 0. Line in mute checkbox checked alt balance button alt plus B. OK button. Cancel button. Tab control. Levels tab selected.
So that's the levels tab.
Enhancements tab selected.
Enhancements. Now this is an important tab to consider because you want everything turned off. If you're going to be doing audio work, you don't need to sound like you're coming from an alien spacecraft. You don't need echoes and reverbs. You don't need EQ boosting the bass, you know, an equalizer boosting the bass and flattening the treble. And you don't need all that because that's going to make it very difficult for you to understand what is going on with your audio if it's all skewed by enhancements. And there are all kinds of enhancements package with their sound cards. There's compression and there's all kinds of things that maybe some of you don't know what they all are, but you want them all off. That's all you need to know about. And you may need sighted assistance to do that because some sound cards, including this one, I have a Dell laptop, and on top of my sound card, Dell has put a bunch of applications and bloatware, which is very difficult to get rid of.
Cleric and Ranger.txt added. Cleric and Ranger.
Thanks. Sorry about that. So it can make it an extra pro, that extra software isn't designed with us in mind.
Enhancements property page simulates multiple playback environments. Provider, real, select the sound effects to apply for your current listening configuration. Changes may not take effect until the next time you start playback list. Environment checkbox selected, not checked.
Yeah, you see, so this is all the stuff I get with my Realtek card.
Sound effect, OK button.
Don't want any of it.
Cancel button. Tab control. Enhancements tab selected.
Things we have here.
Advanced tab selected.
Advanced tab.
Default format grouping. Select the sample rate and bit depth to be used when running in shared mode combo box 24-bit. 48,000 Hz studio quality collapsed.
So the playback is in shared mode, 48,000 24-bit quality.
Test button alt plus D. Exclusive mode grouping. Allow applications to take exclusive control of this device. Checkbox checked.
So I have exclusive mode checked.
Give exclusive mode applications priority. Checkbox checked.
Give exclusive mode applications priority.
Restore default button alt. OK button. Cancel button. Tab control. Advanced tab selected.
And that's pretty much that. But there's more. All we've dealt with so far is the playback half of my default sound settings. Does anybody want to comment on them? Do either Jessica or Derek want to expand on anything I've said?
Cancel. Okay, but press sound.
Didn't see enhanced mode.
Enhancements. It's one of the tabs provided. So just to review, open up the sound part of your control panel. However you do it, whether you press Windows key, type sound and cursor down until you hear just sound in the settings thing, or whether you go to control panel and access sound, or whether you type in the following string, which Jessica's going to remind us of, or Damien can.
mmsys.cpl.
There you go, mmsys.cpl. And then you open that up. You'll be presented with a playback tab. You select the device you want to configure. You tab to properties. You press enter or space on properties. Then you can control tab to the tab you want. You might want to adjust the level, though you can do that more conveniently elsewhere, which I won't go into now. You might want to turn enhancements off, or you might want to lock the sample rate and bit depth of that sound card.
It's worth noting some sound cards do not have an enhancements tab. If you do not see it, do not fret.
That's a good thing. You want to turn enhancements off. If you don't have an enhancements tab, that means you don't have enhancements to turn off.
It's so also worth noting that even though you may have an enhancements tab, you may still hear enhancements. And that, my friends, is because your sound card is being controlled by an external control panel, which may or may not be accessible. So you will need to turn your enhancements off in your Realtek control panel, your Dell control panel, your whatever control panel.
Okay, so we're just going to go on briefly to the recording half of this.
Okay button.
But.
Playback property page. Properties button alt plus key.
Playback property page.
Recording property page. Select a recording device below to modify its settings. List.
Here is the list of devices we have to select for our default recording device, and we can configure any of them. We don't have to set them to default for them to be configured.
Line, 3 audio box USB audio, ready 1 of 11.
So I have 11 recording devices. This is because of the way virtual audio cable works.
Microphone, Realtek mic 1, virtual mic 2, mic 3, virtual line 1, line, 3 audio box USB audio, ready 1 of 11.
We are inputting through my line 3 audio, my Presonus audio box, so that's going to be what we have a look at.
Set default split button submenu alt plus S.
I could set this as my default recording device. I don't need to because I've routed it appropriately elsewhere.
Properties button alt plus D.
We're going to press properties.
Line properties dialog. Edit selected line. Change icon button alt plus I. Controller information
so
groupings.
Remember, this is pretty much the same tab as before. We don't care about it. It's change icon. It's, do you want to call it something different?
Device usage. Combo box use this device. Enable. Collapse.
It's whether you want the device enabled or disabled.
OK button.
So let's go to the next tab.
Property page. You can listen to a portable music player or other device through this line jack. Listen to this device. Checkbox not checked.
This is how you can, and I don't do this, so Jessica, perhaps you'd like to explain listens because you use them. I don't use them. I'll explain briefly why I don't use them before I hand over to Jessica. This is a listen tab, and I don't use listens because when my laptop dies of lack of battery, when it goes into hibernation, listens break. They keep my audio repeaters open from my virtual mixer, and then my mixer crashes and I have to restart the whole thing when I start my laptop up again. So I don't use listens, so I'm not very experienced in their usage. So over to Jessica.
So I'm going to be very brief about this. Basically, what a listen allows you to do is listen to a card, like another card or another something through this thing. So in this input here, this listen, you can listen to your speakers, for instance, through this. So, like, in the case of virtual audio cable for me, with virtual line 1.
You mean your microphone, because it's a recording tab.
Right, sorry. In the case of my microphone, well, no, it's still virtual line 1, because virtual line 1 plays and records.
The listen is under the record tab, so basically what she's saying is, if you have a device with an input on it, you want to hear what that input sounds like as if it were being recorded.
Recorded, yep. Or if it were being pushed out. So you can send the input to your speakers.
So that trick I was doing with Reaper basically was the trick that you could do with listens, where you could hear the delay, for example, of your device. You could hear what it would sound like and so on. I was just using Reaper rather than listens because, quite frankly, it was just quicker with the way this stuff's set up to use Reaper.
Yeah. And you have the input and outputs to do so. You know, some people don't. And so this is kind of a quick way to do that. You can, you know, get the input of your microphone or whatever and have it loop, you know, listen through your speakers and you can hear what you sound like.
So a practical example, let's say you have an external sound card and let's say there's something cool about that sound card. Let's say you want to stream Winamp to Skype. You want to read a book or listen to music with a friend. So what you do is you would point Winamp at your external sound card. There are ways to do that within Winamp, which is beyond the scope of this. And you would have Skype use your external sound card as its input. So Skype is listening to your external sound card. Winamp is playing to your external sound card. But you want to be able to hear what you're playing to. So what you do is you create a listen from your external sound card to your internal sound card, which perhaps you are not playing through for whatever reason. You might not, you know, I do this kind of thing all the time. And a listen is a faster way, a less latent way of doing it than the one I have to use, which is via extra options in my virtual mix and my virtual audio cable. I have to do that because my listens crash. So moving swiftly on to the next tab.
Dialogue 100, line grouping, line size at 100.
Here we have, and it hasn't read it, but we have levels. So my microphone level is at maximum.
Mute checkbox not checked, Alt plus M.
We don't want to mute it if I do that.
Checked. Not checked.
And then I uncheck, and I'm back.
Balance button, Alt plus B.
Balance.
OK button. Cancel button. Property page low frequency protection eliminates frequencies below a specified cutoff to reduce audio distortion provider. Microsoft status, disabled. Select the enhancements to apply for your current speaker configuration.
Here we have enhancements again for the recording tab. We want all off.
Default format grouping. Select the sample rate and bit depth to be used when running in shared mode combo box to channel. 16-bit, 44,100 Hz CD quality collapsed.
Oh wow, is that what I'm set to? I can be higher than that.
2-channel, 16-bit, 48,000 Hz, 2-channel, 24-bit, 44,100 Hz, 2-channel, 24-bit, 48,000 Hz, studio quality.
There you go.
So there we are. That wasn't configured properly. Now we have what I want. We have,
there
as opposed
go.
To 2-channel 16-bit 44,100 Hz stuff, we have 2-channel 24-bit 48,000 Hz. That's much better. I didn't realize I was set to that.
Exclusive mode grouping. Allow applications to take exclusive control of this device. Checkbox checked.
Yep.
Give exclusive mode applications priority. Checkbox checked. Restore default button. Alt. OK button. Press.
And those two checkboxes are what Jessica was talking about.
Properties button. Alt plus D.
With the exclusive and shared stuff.
OK button. Recording property page. Properties button. Alt plus D. Line proper. Property page low freak. Virtual server. Default. Exclusive mode grouping. Allow applications. Default format grouping. Select 2-2-2. Tab. Apply button. Alt. Cancel button. OK button. Press. Sound dialog. Recording property page. Essentials. Team talk. 5 class. Haunted house modifier. 6 solo armed. 0 items. Unarmed. Armed. Not when playing. Record monitor off. Normal.
I think Justin's, like, his microphone disappeared somewhere.
Edit blank.
Searching. I know why.
Ah, sample.
Yeah. He changed record sample and bit depth. It totally cute.
Put your microphone, Realtek High
defeated.
Microsoft sound combo box. Microphone, Realtek High. Line 3.
So he's gonna...
While he does that...
And we get to watch him do it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to show...
It's happened to everyone, guys. This is... We're not laughing at, we're laughing with. This stuff happens.
Preferences dialog.
It's mistakes we've all made.
Page input sample rate. Output device combo box speakers slash headphone. Input device combo box line 2. Virtual audio cable line 1. Virtual line 3 audio.
I totally jumbled his whole order of operations.
Hi, guys.
Now he's off panned off to the right.
Yeah, so I wanted to show something with the listens real quick. I don't have virtual audio cable right now. But I do have something cool.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, that kind of broke. Oh, well.
Now he's all off to the right.
I'm off to the right because I wanted to show you something. I wanted to show you how bad my latency is. Because I'm playing through Reaper and things. You can still hear my speech, right? That didn't break.
No.
No.
It's not there.
It's not there. Okay.
No.
No.
I won't show you. It's not vitally important, but what I wanted to show you was that I have... appalling latency, because what I'm doing, for those of you that can keep up with it, is I have my microphone connected to my external USB sound card, which does support ACO, but I'm not using it in ACO mode because I didn't configure it such. Then I have Reaper outputting to a virtual audio cable, a part of my virtual mixer, which is then going to my speakers so I can hear it, and to you, so you can hear it in theory before I broke things. So that is terrible latency, and kind of a very clunky way to set things up. But as I say, because of the way I work, because I do sound design, because all my stuff is offline, it's all post-production, it doesn't matter as much. But I'm going to go away and repair the shattered remains of my audio setup now, and let Jessica show you what she wanted to show you. Hurrah.
This is kind of a preview of study group.
I love how he, like, goes like back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah,
like,
that was kind of
back and center ish, and then up to right again. And
so,
modu mix slash instrument 1-2 modu audio wave for 64 bits ready 205 set defaults properties.
So we're gonna go in here and set up a listen.
Tab control general.
And I want you guys to hear what happens though if I do this, set up this listen for this particular mic instrument.
property page, you can listen to a portable music player or other device through this modu /instrument 1 2 jack. Listen to this device not checked. Checked. Playback through this device. Modu main out 1 2. Modu audio wave for 64 bit collapsed. Power management okay. Can apply alt plus a. Pressed unavailable.
Hello. Can anyone see the problem?
Yes, I can hear you at first normally and then on the left.
Yep. And we'll cover more about why this happens on Thursday. But essentially, I'm listening directly to my mic strip. But my microphone is only connected to my left, my mic channel one. So if mic channel one is on the left, and if I was connected to mic channel two instead, where do you think mic channel two would be?
On the right.
Yep. So I won't actually keep this because this is confusing.
Listen to this device. Not checked.
We'll take that away.
You're talking about the can't talk while latency is going on? Yeah, it's kind of a little disorienting.
And I had to get used to it. Because when I did Osara, or I did Eric, I needed that latency. Otherwise, the people couldn't hear the way that I set, you know, set everything up. So the whole, I don't know if you knew this, but the whole five lectures at latency, not that, a little bit less, I had it.
Yeah, and when I talk to you, you guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. And when I talk to you, I also have appalling latency, and I have to put up with that most of the time in my ears. Not at the moment, because things are still broken, which is why I had to confirm that you could hear me. But I have to get used to hearing myself back on an echo, which is very distracting, but I've kind of got used to it because I'm prepared to put up with appalling latency.
Yep, and I can do that as well, but right now I'm hearing myself directly through my headphones. I'm monitoring myself directly through the hardware right now. So I pretty much hear myself when I talk.
And by the way, if you listen to last Thursday's study group podcast, you can hear my latency because my headphones leak really badly. I didn't have them properly on my ears. And so whenever I talk, you can hear this little echo of me in the background. And that is my latency.
Essentials, modu audio, 5 6 low-key, mix 1.
Let's get rid of that. So that was what I wanted to show you, is just kind of a preview of what happens sometimes, what you have to deal with when you're plugging stuff up to an interface, you know, with your channels and things like that.
I think we've covered a ton of stuff.
Yeah, that's all I've got.
Wasapi, shared mode, exclusive mode, latency, listens, virtual audio cable, control panel, mm.sys.cpl, whatever it's called.
How do you all feel? And direct sound.
How do you all feel about it? Do you have questions? Where do you feel like the holes in your knowledge are? Like, we don't have more class time to help you with this, really. But we can. It would be helpful to know how you're feeling about it, where the holes in your knowledge are, so we can arrange some kind of reinforcement.
Damien?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm fine with today's stuff. I'm still... Definitely seem I'm still hazy on cables and mics.
Other people?
We'll try to help you out. Also, remember Audio IO and Audio Discuss. Just ask. I promise you shouldn't get crickets by doing so. It's if you have a specific question, ask away, my friend.
I'm a little confused, but...
Are there aspects you find more confusing than others? Like, was there a certain point you got it up until and then we lost you?
For instance, when I use my interface, I hear myself fine without any latency, and I hear JAWS talking through my computer speakers. But there was a point in time when I had things kind of set up a little differently so that when I was recording, I heard both through my interface. And I don't know why that's so, but... Anyway, I just got a little confused today.
Okay, well, what are you using to record?
If I might interject to make a recommendation.
And the program used?
Reaper. And I was using Audacity, but the latency was so bad and it didn't support ASIO, so I went to Reaper. But I had it set up at one point in time so that I was, again, hearing both my speech through the interface, unless I unplugged the interface, then it automatically went back to the computer speakers.
Well, you're one of the lucky people that has an interface that works with latency and a WDM type audio system at the same time. So all you would have to do is change JAWS back to your Focusrite, and you will hear both Reaper and JAWS in your headphones. Jason?
Sure. I feel like I understand to a pretty good degree the different subsystems, although I'll be reviewing. But the one thing I'm not sure about is how do I know which is running or something. I'm not quite sure on how to figure what's going on with my system right now.
How do you mean running?
Yeah.
I guess I feel like, okay, am I running with, the K mix mode, or is that just older, or am I using MME? You know, God forbid, that sounds like it has a lot of limitation. Or am I running with the newest K, it was something else, but I'm not remembering at the moment.
With the things that exist these days that are worth using for audio, you can tell your system what it should do as opposed to hope that it is or have to guess what it's doing. So even things like TeamTalk, I even think Ventrilo. Is Ventrilo, does it let you do the different subsystems? I think it does. But Goldwave will let you record and play back through the different subsystems. So will Reaper, obviously. A lot of things do. Like I said, the media players can play through them. There are ways to do that. And I think, and Jessica's done more research of late on the subsystems than
control properties dialog, tab control,
exists. She could verify this. But if something isn't specified, I think it goes through
KMixer.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to finish my
sentence.
I was breaking things. KMixer is not what it uses anymore, first off, is what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Windows Audio Engine is the new KMixer, I guess. The new and improved KMixer.
As of which Windows?
As of Windows Vista.
I thought KMixer came with Windows Vista. That's what Carrie said last
semester. No, Windows Mixer came with, or KMixer came with Windows 98.
So it sounds like...
So you got them crossed up.
So it sounds like it's the individual programs that give you the choices of what need to be used rather than the control panel.
It is, exactly. Like, I went through the control panel settings that you have accessible, mm-hmm. and you're not going to see Wave Out, Direct Sound, Wasapi, etc. there. You are going to see it in TeamTalk, in Goldwave, in Reaper, in various other programs that give you that level of flexibility. And you can say, okay, here's the sound card. Which sound card do you want me to use? Okay, here are the options you have available for that sound card. Oh, wow, this sound card supports ASIO. Here's an ASIO option in your list. Otherwise, it's going to be the basic ones. And Reaper, even though I'm running Windows 8, will still give me like a kernel streaming option, which I shouldn't use because I should use Wasapi.
Can you hear this?
Goldwave control properties dialog. Tab control. Play selected.
Yes.
Okay, so, oops, why did I go all the way over there?
System selected.
So if I go here.
System property page. Use core audio / Wasapi checked.
See, and it'll even show me, I'm not going to let this read the entire thing, but.
Configure. Information. Okay.
It'll even tell me things like.
Rest. Computer, Windows 7 Ultimate, 64-bit service pack 1, 6.1, build 7601, / Windows 7 Ultimate Goldwave v6.24 settings, API, Wasapi timer on level activated, off unbounded, off DC filter, on monitoring, off play quality, 44,100Hz/2/32, shared record quality,
see,
44.
So it's telling me all this information about my...
Very cool. Okay.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Goldwave, essential mode, Wasapi mix 1.
That's all I've got, unless anyone has any more questions. I have to find the bell.
I got it.
Okay, you got it.
I was going to say, I'm not pressing any more buttons. I don't know what's going to come out where now.
Poor Justin. For this week?
But I am an
poor
example
Justin.
of fit for purpose. I don't do what Jessica and Derek do most of the time. I come on this external sound card with my microphone on the stand just for you guys, just to make it easier for Derek to edit. And just so I sound a bit better and just so I have a little more flexibility. Most of the time for the audio work, I don't need to do that. I can do it all out of the box on my cheap laptop sound card and my even cheaper pair of headphones. So I don't usually have this many buttons to press and this many things to break. So
like this?
Yeah, they break.
But see, Justin's
so
really cool.
I'm so dizzy and wrapped around now. If I pressed that, I would not. I would not know where it was going to come out of.
So do we have an assignment?
So the assignment I have, maybe you guys can add on this, instructors. What audio subsystem do you think would be good for you if you can decide that right now? And on Thursday for the study group, you'll learn about mixers and interfaces. So you're going to add to your equipment list of what you need. So you can discuss if you need a mixer or an interface and what you might need and research it and tell us what you find or ask us questions.
Yeah, the bulk of this week's assignment is actually going to be given on in Thursday's class. On just Thursday's, a reminder, Thursday's core content, study group slot, lecture it content.
A study group, but it is core content. So if you can't be there, listen to the podcast.
So is this our last class, or do we have one more of the this?
This is our last one more, class of on the module, our last lecture. We have one more study group, but this is our last. Yeah, this class and the study group is our last week of this module. Next week, we're going into effects. So you need to make sure that you at least have a majority of this stuff down.
Which isn't a module at all.
No.
Effects, you guys are joined by all the Reaper and Goldwave students. It's something for everyone.
Yep.
So then after that class, then we start the Goldwave and Reaper?
Yep. Yep.
Hooray!
You say that now.
Has it been decided what day Goldwave is and what day Reaper is? Is it Monday Reaper,
Wednesdays,
Thursday Goldwave?
Or why did I say Wednesdays? Mondays is Mondays is Reaper and Thursdays is Goldwave.
Thanks.
No problem.
Are they similar, or do they have like overlapping like techniques?
Oh. In brief, not really.
No. Reaper's a multi-track editor, Goldwave's a single track editor. So no.
How close is Goldwave to like Audacity and some of the terms that they're using? Like,
Reaper's closer than
Goldwave is like closer to SoundForge.
Yeah.
And Reaper's closer to Audacity because Audacity has tracks.
I might have to unlearn a lot of my Audacity stuff.
Oh, I don't just unlearn, add. Just add.
Yeah.
And Reaper is Monday and Goldwave is Thursday?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I thought it was the other way around. I'm going to be very daunted then. Oh, dear. Because it's obviously, it's going to be multi-track and then single-track, and it's just going to be like, wow.
Yeah, the reason I did it that way is because I'm the one mostly teaching Goldwave this semester, and I have Thanksgiving on Thursday, which will break Goldwave. Or which would break Reaper, I'm sorry, if it was on Thursdays.
Because there's
me and Derek both, so.
Reaper and there's more to teach in Reaper. So yeah. if we put it in where Thanksgiving
Reaper needs every available week left.
Yeah.
And then some more. So if anyone has any spare weeks lying around that they would like to donate to the Reaper module, they would be gratefully received.
Yeah, donating, that's a cool word. And you just say.
You can plug that 2 weeks' time on Monday, Gianluca.
Yes, you can.
Oh, God.
The cool thing about Goldwave, though, guys, is that Goldwave is 8, maybe 9 weeks. And so there will be a couple weeks that you don't have class because I'm splitting it up so that they basically finish around the same time. And so that for particularly some of the harder Reaper parts, you have a little bit of a break to kind of catch up.
Okay. I have a vote on something.
Uh-oh.
I vote, like, for real this time. That's my personal vote.
I thought we voted this a while ago. I just, you know, figured people were asking, you know, after questions like they always do.
Yeah, but it was good stuff. So, you know, recordings are still going, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, that's why I cast the vote that would be reinforced so we can all like process all the that we
get out. So yeah, I warned you this was a bit daunting, but I promise it is useful information.
Well, thank you for another jam-packed class.
Indeed. We will see you guys hopefully on Thursday.
All right, then. See you later.
See you later.
Yeah, see you guys. Thanks for coming.